Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 23rd. And it is another rainy morning in southern Wisconsin, and flood worries continue. More rain in the forecast for today and tonight and tomorrow. Who would have thought just a few weeks ago when it was so dry that we would be praying for the rain to stop? Well, the weather this summer has contributed to some of the problems that travelers have faced at our nation's airports trying to fly off on vacation or on business. But as we will find out this hour, we can't blame all of the problems that airports are having or airlines are having on the weather. We're going to talk about why we are experiencing so many problems this summer and why this is frustrating so many of us. Flight delays way up, lost luggage complaints way up, canceled flights, overbooked flights, people left on the tarmac for hours and hours. What's going on? And what can be done about it? A U.S. representative is in a lot of trouble right now over a flap over his luggage. On Sunday, Congressman Bob Filner, a Democrat from the San Diego area, allegedly pushed an airline employee at Dulles International Airport when he entered a restricted area of the airport looking for, reportedly, a lost bag. Filner faces misdemeanor assault and battery charges when he returns from a trip to Iraq where he is visiting the troops. This is the latest example, albeit a very high-profile one, of the frustrations and tensions going on right now between airlines and airports and customers. We will talk about why this is happening and whether our guest has any idea what can be done about it. And we will welcome your questions and your stories, perhaps. Do you have an airline travel horror story to share? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Mary Schiavo, former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation and author of Flying Blind, Flying Safe. She's currently an aviation attorney. She joins us this morning from Charleston, South Carolina. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks very much for being with us. I know you're very busy these days. I've seen you on a number of national reports because of all these problems that are going on.
Well, that's true, because of all these problems and also because of my workload, the 9/11 litigation after 6 years is due to actually start. So, and of course, we're taking the lead on that. So it's a very busy time, and I wish the airlines would perform better so we could fly around to all these venues a little easier.
Yeah. So what is your reaction to this latest incident involving Congressman Bob Filner?
Well, there, you know, it actually probably could be helpful in the long run. The problem for us regular American flyers is our leaders are not on our aircraft. Up until a recent change in ethics laws, of course, Congress people and senators could hitch rides on corporate jets. The head of the FAA has an airplane, N1, flies around the system in a private jet. Our cabinet officers, if their department doesn't have a private jet, they can lease private planes. And so they don't really understand the system because they're not in it every day. I average a flight a day. And I think they've been so far removed from the problem that they have really abdicated their responsibilities for seeing that the system works. And this summer we have the perfect storm. We have airlines in massive cost-cutting modes because of the price of fuel. We have more and more traffic because the bigger jets are being replaced by the smaller regional jets, which people seem to like because you get more flights, you get point-to-point service, but that means you have more planes in the system, and then that brings us to the third problem, which are the delays, which are caused in large measure by the fact that we have 530 commercial use airports in the United States, but the traffic is centered in about 30 of them, our 30 hubs. And so we're simply trying to stuff too many airplanes on the highways in the sky. And the reason we have to do that, here's the final peg of the problem, is we were to have a whole new air traffic control system by now. And it was supposed to be completely computer controlled, automated switching, added measures of safety, but we didn't get that because it's not done yet. And so we have air traffic control problems, too much traffic into too few airports, and airlines cutting back on staff and services.
Boy, it really is multifaceted, isn't it? Yeah.
Those are what's all coming together.
Yeah, I mean, so it seems like a lost bag is small potatoes with all of this going on, but I saw the statistic, lost luggage complaints are up 92% this year. That, I mean, why is that happening even with all of these other things going on?
Well,
92%?
It's up 92% because, again, we have this funnel, this bottleneck. We are funneling so many flights into so few airports that in many cases it is simply not physically possible for the airport personnel to make the connections. For example, I'm in and out of Hartsfield all the time in Atlanta. I might be able to run, and you have to run from gate to gate if you're going to check a plane or get your next flight, make your connection. But they can't do that on the bags. And, of course, the other reason is that the service personnel at airports and at airlines are down. They are cost-cutting in any ways that they can. And so where in the past there might have been a number of personnel, literally bag runners they're called, and they will search out and find if a bag falls off a conveyor belt, bag runners would run it here and run it there. A lot of these service personnel just are gone.
We will check our weather forecast, and then we'll talk about what can be done about this as we talk about the trouble with airports and airlines and the customer-unfriendly travel season this summer, with flight delays and lost luggage complaints going through the roof, and wondering if this kind of thing is happening to you. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Plus, we welcome any questions you have for our guest expert, Mary Schiavo, former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation, an aviation attorney, and author of Flying Blind, Flying Safe. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 23rd. It's At Issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. Congressman Tom Tancredo joins Ben after 4 to discuss his campaign for the Republican presidential nomination. Ben's series with candidates running for president continues today after 4 o'clock, and you have an opportunity to talk with one of them, Congressman Tom Tancredo. We're talking with Mary Schiavo this hour. She is an aviation expert, an aviation attorney, author of Flying Blind, Flying Safe, former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation. She's talking with us about the very unfriendly travel season that we have had with our airports and airlines, and wondering if you have some sort of story to share or a question for her. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Mary, I was afraid to take a trip a couple of weeks ago, flying to Philadelphia for a short vacation to see some family, because I heard that one of the worst airports for delays and the like was the Philadelphia airport. But I'm happy to report all went well. We had a pleasant flight on Midwest Airlines, a little plug for the hometown airline. Does it matter what airline you choose?
Well, it can matter what airline. What matters most, though, can be the time of day and the airport and the weather. For example, Newark Airport has, and so does Atlanta and several airports, have pretty strict flow control in place to prevent miles and miles of stacking in the air. And so you simply cannot take off until you have your assured landing spot and landing time at the other end. So if you're going to have a delay, what they're trying to do is if you're going to have a delay, you're going to sit in the plane at the tarmac at your origination airport. And many times that will do the trick if you don't have bad weather. And if it's early in the day, by late in the day with all the delays and the backups, et cetera, that's when you're going to have your most chance of a misconnect, of a delayed flight. So the best choice and best chance for everyone is to get the earliest flight that they can, and you've got a better, statistically, a better chance of being on time.
That we did take an early flight, and now it just came back to me. Maybe I blocked it out. We did circle in the sky for longer than we should have, I think, to wait for a time to land. So while we weren't super late in our landing time, there was some unnecessarily circling of Philadelphia, I think, or necessary, I guess, if there wasn't a place to land.
Right.
I did get an email from a listener also just before I went on that trip, and maybe she's listening right now. She just had a nightmare on a Northwest flight that she was on. It was canceled, I think, for mechanical reasons, and couldn't get another flight until very late the next day, or maybe even the day after that, and they had some expensive vacation, you know, lined up, and you know, this destroyed their vacation, and it was just terrible. She did receive some vouchers for airport food, but that didn't console her very much.
Right, and that's a situation where the airlines in days gone by, you know, of 2 to 3, even as recently as 2 to 3 years ago, they had a number of airline rules in place that would have given her some help and some protection. For example, it used to be that the airlines would automatically rebook you on the next flight, no matter what carrier it was. You could demand a hotel. It was airline rules 240 and 260, and you could get a hotel if it was the airline's fault, which a mechanical is, and food and payments for any delay. Well, there's a little loophole in those laws, and those laws don't apply if your airplane is 50 seats or less. And guess what? The regional jets are all 50 seats or less, and so the airlines have been very stingy about any kind of amenities for passengers, and they also have in place rules. Now, they're supposed to tell you what these rules are, but most of them won't, as to who gets rebooked first. So if you're on a ticket bought from a liquidator, if you're on a ticket from Travelocity or any of those other kinds of folks, and if you're on a budget ticket, a low-price ticket, you're at the end of the line for getting a rebooking. And so with the loads, in some cases, the planes are 90% or more full. If your flight is canceled or you're bumped or you miss it, it can really now be a day or two before you can get out because there just aren't any extra seats. And if you do have a discount ticket or a ticket purchased from liquidator, you're not going to be very high on their priority of rebooking.
Don in Madison is with us now. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Good morning. I had one comment about my recent air travel. Most has been corporate and flying to St. Louis and both Denver. I've not had any too bad experiences, so I think I've been lucky. But you're right, most of them have been on some of these smaller regional jets. I also, the questions I guess I had were that, do you feel like there needs to be a major restructuring of how these airlines run their corporations? It just seems like the business as usual doesn't work any longer. And the second part is, there seems to be a little bit of corporate greed, which seems to be a running theme in America lately also, that they whine and scream about not being able to make profits, but yet the top executives make millions and millions of dollars in salary and bonuses. And it just feels like you just kind of pegged on it a little bit ago, that the people who are paying the low budget fares are kind of at the bottom totem pole. It feels as though aviation is swinging back to what it was in its early days, where it was something for the elite, the financially elite. And is that something where we're approaching, where fares just need to jump 2-3 times what they are to reduce some of this congestion, and it pushes all middle America and less affluent travelers out? Mm. Appreciate your comments.
Yeah, appreciate your call.
Sure. Oh, boy, you've got your finger on the pulse on so many of the problems. I have to say, first of all, about the corporate executive salaries, obviously I was involved and remain significantly involved in what happened on 9/11 and thereafter in litigating the aftermath. And what was truly astonishing is the nation and everyone in the nation, people stepped in, made a major contribution to the airlines. Their liability was waived other than insurance policies. They received between 20, depending on how you calculate it, 20 to as much as $100 billion in subsidies. And in that same time frame, in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, corporate executives at many of the airlines were taking increases and insisted that their pay guarantees in the millions and millions of dollars be preserved while employees were being laid off, and some of their own employees, of course, were lost in the aftermath of 9/11. So I do not think that the corporate leadership of many of the airlines has stepped up to the plate. In particular, what has happened is they're certainly aware of the problems, too, but they continue to funnel the traffic and to feed the system in the way that is just the least productive, which is why I think that you're right. We have returned to some of the problems of the earlier days of aviation, and we do have to have the government step in for safety reasons. I'm not even going to get into the economic realities of it, but we now have such congestion, and the statistics are just headed the wrong way. We have increased numbers of near collisions. We have we've even decreased the separation distance between our flights to stuff more traffic in the system at the 30 busiest airports. We have done things literally headed the wrong direction that we have spent 100 years developing for safety reasons, and the airlines won't step up to the plate. They just will not change it because they say that's what customers want. And thus, I think it is time for the government to step in. I know regulation seems to be a bad word in this country, but I don't agree with it. It is our national airspace system. We, the people, own the air routes above our heads. Mm-hmm. The airlines don't own the land over which they fly, and so they can expect and should expect to be reasonably regulated for safety and convenience.
Yeah. What sort of regulation do you want to see the federal government put in place?
Well, the federal government is going to absolutely have to do something about the congestion at the hubs. Now, we were simply going the wrong way. At the beginning of this century, what we did is we lifted the old slot regime. People will recall that airlines used to have to purchase slots. If you wanted to land at Philadelphia, for example, you needed to have slots or landing rights at Philadelphia. And we did away with that system because the thought was, is if we opened it up, that the system would work in the best economic model, and those most able to serve certain cities would run the flights, and others would go away. Well, that didn't happen because at the same time the airplane fleet turned to these small regional jets, and for less cost, airlines could continue to run multiple routes. So what happened is we further congested the system with additional flights, but really no additional capacity. We didn't add seats because the planes got smaller. And so I do think that it is time for the government to step in and say, you know what, folks, we're not going to have two-hour delays at Newark. We're not going to continue to decrease the separation between planes. They will remain separated at a mile and a half. And if you don't like it, I'm sorry, but Newark Airport's full. You're going to have to use another airport, and that's a problem that we have as a country. We have allowed the airlines to dictate which airports we will have. For example, in Chicago, we desperately need another airport. Mm-hmm. American and United have opposed it. So the government will have to step in those three areas, decrease the traffic at the congested areas, require the opening and use of other airports, and keep those aircraft separations up. We don't want them flying 500 feet from each other.
We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Mary Schiavo, former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation, currently an aviation attorney, author of Flying Blind, Flying Safe. And we'll take your questions, more questions, for her at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Thursday, August the 23rd. And we're talking about the trouble with the airline industry and our air transportation system this hour. Wondering if you've had a nightmare of an experience flying anywhere on vacation or business this summer. The summer skies were not friendly at all to many travelers. Delays are at their highest level in more than a decade. Lost luggage complaints up 92%. canceled flights, flight delays, pilot shortages, planes left on the tarmac for hours full of passengers. We're talking about why this is happening and what can be done about it. Our guest says it's time for the federal government to step in with some regulations to relieve some of the congestion that we are seeing at some of the busiest airports. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a thought or a story or a question for our guest. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890-263-1890. Our conversation prompted not only by these problems all summer long, but just on Sunday, a congressman, U.S. Representative Bob Filner, a Democrat from California, got into some trouble. He now faces some charges when he gets back from a trip to Iraq because he allegedly tried to enter a restricted area of the airport to try to find his lost luggage, and he pushed aside an employee who tried to stop him. So, congressman now facing some of the problems many of us have faced as well. Our guest, Mary Schiavo, former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation and author of Flying Blind, Flying Safe, currently an aviation attorney, says maybe this congressman now can get to work in Congress doing something that helps alleviate all these problems. Back to the phones we go. Michelle in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I've recently been flying quite a bit more, and my question actually pertains to how using a quart-sized bag to hold small liquids is going to help with security lines. It seems like it's just slowed everything down so much more. And I recently flown through two of the country's largest airports as well as a few small ones and had a gel, a liquid, a cream all in my bag without a baggie. And in each one of those airports, I was allowed to go through without it being a baggie. And then finally, the last airport that I went through that had the longest line was the one that ended up stopping me with it in my bag. So my question is what's being done to alleviate this issue?
Mm-hmm. Did you have to give up your lip gloss, Michelle?
Oh, goodness. You don't even know all the stuff I had to give up. And, it's simply from forgetting that it's in your bag.
Yeah. Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Mary Schiavo?
Absolutely. She makes one of the most frequent points and complaints by travelers. The system isn't uniform. People will get through, for example, at one airport, and then they'll go into the other port with the same thing they just took through somewhere else, and then they will have a dumpster. So they'll have to dump everything out of their bags. Technically, the rules are if you have liquids and gels in your bags, in your carry-ons that you don't have in a separate one-quart see-through plastic bag that you separately place in the screening outside of your bag, then if they find them, technically their rules are they're supposed to search all your bags and you, meaning you get the selectee search, which, of course, you don't want because it slows everything down. Well, airports aren't doing that, or there's the TSA. The TSA isn't doing that because, exactly, it slows the whole airport down. They can't possibly do a dump search on every bag and a selectee search on every person. That forgets about a tube of cream or something in their purse. So that's why you get this disparate search techniques all over the country. But the best thing really is to do that and put it in a separate bag, because what they always say is, oh, I see you know the routine, great. And they it does speed you up individually. But the rule, of course, no one's really certain. That was as a result of what happened in Britain, where they were going to do a liquid kind of bomb on board. Mm-hmm. But now, of course, a couple months ago, they were finding test runs with more, I don't want to say traditional, but explosive kinds of devices that were used once before. And it was made with, instead of the plastic explosives, they were using cheese. So now, will they be looking at other substances? Sure. They'll be looking at all kinds of things because, quite frankly, the terrorists are always testing the system. But the uniformity problem is a big problem, because once you've gone through security, you think everything is fine, then you do it again and you get stopped and you're given the full criminal treatment. So uniformity would help, or simply following the same rules all over the country. We are, after all, the same country. And that's one of the biggest complaints that I hear, is people say, well, what is it? Shoes on, shoes off. Stuff in bags, stuff not in bags. What do you want us to do? That's the biggest issue.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Michelle. Dan in Madison is with us now. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
Part of the solution for the congestion of airports, I believe, would be a more efficient use of ground transit. We need to have more investment in improving especially rail service, because many flights of under 200 or 300 miles could more efficiently be done, travel could be more efficiently be done if we had a better rail system. And that's going to require federal and probably also state support.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we build that, if they will ride. Mary Schiavo, any thoughts on that?
Well, if we build it, they will ride on certain kinds of distances. But the problem is we have given up so much of the former infrastructure that we had. For example, in many cities, the rail lines that used to exist for the trolleys, for lots of kinds of rail, both heavy and light rail, up and through the 1950s, we had the routes. We had the land. And when I say we, I mean we, the people, the government, the public, had the right for these rights of ways. But what has happened is so many of those right-of-way egresses and ingresses in and out of the cities have been lost. They have been sold off. They have been turned into walking paths. They have been sold back to the landowners. So other than the existing rail lines that we already have, and, you know, basically it's the East Coast corridor, as we know, the D.C.-Boston run, D.C.-New York, other than those high traffic rail areas, what we are seeing is clearly a move in the other direction. Amtrak is dropping routes all over the country, and there's really not a lot of hope in most of the cities to bring some of the rail back, because in the 50s, we didn't think as a country we wanted it or needed it, and cost prohibitive situations now would be very costly to build those back. I had the opportunity to work and live in Japan for several months. I worked with a think tank connected with Japan Rail.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that people don't realize, everyone points to the Japanese system as a model, and indeed it is. It is unbelievable. If your train schedule says your train's leaving at 12:01, do not get on the train that's on the track at 11:59. That's how precise their system is. But they were able to do a lot of what they have done because the rail lines did have the right of eminent domain. They could take the land that they needed. And because Japan Rail owns the land and the development above the tracks. For example, they own one of the most valuable pieces of real estate in Tokyo. They built the shopping center above their train station, and that then feeds and helps to care for the rail, and the government pays for the upkeep of the rail lines. So that's why other countries can have a lot more rail than we do, and of course they have a huge population crammed into the size of California. So I don't think that we will see that other than that East Coast corridor, which the government is still continuing to subsidize and keep up. Mm-hmm. I don't think rail is going to be in the country's future other than there.
Thank you very much, Dan, for the call. I was thinking that I thought I saw numbers that said that most of us are flying and that, you know, the passenger numbers are up even with all these problems.
They are up. That's one of the, the great things, I guess, about Americans. We keep doing what we need and want to do despite all the troubles, but the passenger yields are up, and remember, the available extra seats are down.
Mm-hmm.
Load factors between 90 and 95%. You know, one of the things that you mentioned about the congressman, and this is kind of important for people along with their one-quart plastic bags, is I have pro bono represented some people to get them out of trouble with the government when they have been, in some cases, I think, falsely accused of problems at the airport. You have to be so careful now. If you raise your voice, some persons at the airport will misuse law enforcement and will misuse the TSA and will literally call out law enforcement even if you question them. For example, if they do something wrong or they aren't giving you a hotel room or a voucher or they won't connect you on the next available flight, and you raise your voice or you get angry at the airport, you will get the TSA or the local airport authorities called on you. And whether that's justified or not is something that will be sorted out in the FAA. And so witnesses may be long gone. So I always caution people, yes, you may question your airline. Yes, you should have your rights. But in this day and age, you have to do it very pleasantly. You may touch no one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do it in a threatening manner because that's assault. People think assault is when you slug someone. No. assault is threatening someone.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful at the airport. And I always tell people you can question anyone and ask for your rights, but always do it with a smile and don't yell.
Good advice. Mary Schiavo, former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation, an aviation attorney and author of Flying Blind, Flying Safe, is offering us some advice on how to deal with all the travel woes that we have been seeing at the nation's airports and throughout the airline travel industry this summer. And we welcome your questions for her. Maybe you're a air travel horror story. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. It's about 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 23rd. School is going to be starting in, what, just over a week or so. We'll talk with a guest who says that he has 50 rules kids won't learn in school. And we'll talk with him about many of them coming up after 7 o'clock. 50 rules kids won't learn in school. We're talking about all the problems we're seeing with the airline industry this summer and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Mary Schiavo is an attorney and author, former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation. And before we go back to the phones, I wanted to ask you, Mary Schiavo, I read about Northwest in particular having some sort of labor situation with pilots. How much does that play into these problems?
Well, it plays into the problems, particularly now for Northwest, but this is a coming crisis in the airline industry. There is a pilot shortage. Pilots, for a lot of reasons, a lot of the pilots that have been in the system for a number of years are eligible for retirement. Some of them have gotten out because when the airlines have gone through bankruptcy, what has happened is they have lost a lot of the value of their pensions and benefits. So that has also forced a lot of people out of the market. But in Northwest's case, what they're doing is simply flying the rules, which is not a very comforting thought to passengers. If when pilots decide to get tough with their carriers, they simply enforce the rules to the letter. Kind of makes you wonder the system we're flying around in otherwise. But there's a coming pilot shortage literally throughout the industry, and it is because pilot salaries and wages are dramatically down. For example, people are surprised to learn that a starting pilot makes less than a bug control person, than someone who works for, say, example, the pest control companies.
Mm.
And people are surprised to learn that because obviously pilots have had to pay for very expensive pilot training. They have huge loans, just like doctors, when they get out of college, and then they face a job where if they're married and have children and their starting job, they will be eligible for food stamps. And so you do not find persons going into the flight field in the numbers that they do before. Not surprisingly, the airlines are looking overseas, which should give the TSA some concern. But it's legal; they are allowed to hire green card employees for their flight crew, and that's what they're doing. So the pilot shortage is real, and it's coming along with the air traffic controller problem shortage.
We had a caller who works at an airport in Wisconsin, I'm not sure where, to say that I should differentiate between airports and airlines. And I guess I have been saying problems at airports because that's where a lot of us spend our times. She saying the airport runs the runway, the airlines are the tenants, we can't control what they do. Is that right?
Well, in some way, she is correct. The airport has the job of opening the airport, keeping the runways open, and following with the Federal Aviation Administration rules. But unless the airport decides to close the airport, all the airport, and the air traffic controller can do is give advisories about the weather and the delays and the likely stack-ups and the lineup. And it is the pilot and the airline that decide whether or not they're going to go into that situation. And until the airport actually closes, for example, even in bad weather, if the airport is not closed, a pilot can make a decision, albeit a bad one, to land in a typhoon, and there's not much that the airport can do about it. Yeah. So the caller, or the caller's correct.
All right. What about the planes that taxi out to the runway, and we think we're going to head off to our vacation, and then there's some sort of delay for whatever reason, and it stays out on the tarmac for hours and hours and hours. Whose decision is that?
That is the airline's decision, mm-hmm. and often it's not even the pilot's decision. I know that they always say, well, the pilot can decide to come back to the mm-hmm. gate. For large carriers that have a dispatch, an airline dispatcher, that's not true. What they do is they put the pilots out on that tarmac, and they wait. And the reason they're waiting out there is twofold. One, they don't want to lose their landing time at their airport on the other end. And if you get out of lineup on the tarmac and go back to the gate, you lose your place in line. And so the pilots are in a bind. Now, the reason the airlines don't want them to do that is if the pilot goes back to the gate and opens that plane door, then the pilot's time in service can stop. For example, your pilot can work 8 hours a day. And if a pilot's worked 7 hours and 59 minutes and is sitting on a tarmac waiting for a takeoff and has a landing time, then that 8 hours is extended indefinitely, or pretty much indefinitely. But if you go back to the gate and wait, at 8 hours, you're done. Your service time is done, and you have to get a new flight crew in, which means more delays, cancellation of flights, et cetera. So the airlines like to keep the pilots out there on the active taxiways because then their duty time is extended indefinitely. And, indeed, I worked the crash of American Airlines 1421 in Little Rock, June 1, 1999, and that's exactly what happened. The pilot in that case had been flying almost an entire day and kept getting extended because of weather delays, et cetera. And, of course, that day made a very bad decision and landed in a level 6 thunderstorm and didn't make it. So the stresses on the pilots come from this crazy landing system where we're overcrowded and you have to get your landing slot, but also from the carrier who doesn't want them back at the gate and having to find a new flight crew.
Right. Steve in Reidsville, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I guess I'm having some trouble understanding how more government intervention is going to help safety when it's really created the problems with security and excessive checks and everything else at the airlines. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Sure. You know, I hear that. I get that a lot because people are skeptical of the government. They say, well, you know, we've got several big bureaucracies that have now collided, and that's what happened. We have the TSA bureaucracy. We have the airlines bureaucracy. And believe me, they are just as big bureaucratic problems as the government. And then, of course, we have the FAA and local governments. But the problem is what people don't see is all the government that's already there. For example, the federal government has the airways, the highways and the sky, if you will. The federal government's running the air traffic control system. The federal government built the airports of this country. Federal funds have paid for almost all the runways, lighting equipment, et cetera. And it is federal regulation that permits the airlines to operate in the manner that they do. This is not an unregulated industry. And so what they need are more sensible regulations, I guess is the better way to say it. We have regulations about, slots and times and all of that, but we don't really enforce some of them. So what we need is more sensible regulations, and I don't think that a regulation that says that we can't have 50 planes in the air trying to land when we only have space and landing times for 20 or 30 of them is a bad government regulation. In fact, I think that's the very essence of why we have government. We have government to do for the people only those things that the people cannot do for themselves. And that's my theory of government. And if ever there was an industry that requires government to keep us safe, it's aviation. Why? Because the airlines are flying over our heads. They don't own the land that they fly over. In fact, the law says if we own the land under them, we own to the heights of the heaven and the depths of the earth. Mm. That's the law. So if they're going to fly over us, reasonable regulation for safety and convenience is something that they have to deal with. And I think at a minimum, we have to get the delays and backups solved, aside from an economic reason, for a safety reason, because those are the statistics that are headed in the wrong way. Increased near midairs, increased ground incursions, increases near misses on takeoffs and landings. Those are the statistics I watch most closely, and they're not going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it is time for the government to step in to save lives.
Thanks, Stephen. One last call this hour. Lenny in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Over the last few years, I've noticed the frequency of some rather bad air disasters in America. What I really wanted to ask was how much of the problem in this first part of the 21st century concerning air travel can be attributed to what the Reagan administration did during Reagan's first term with PACO, and the way these mergers and buyouts have affected the airlines. And let me just explain what I'm saying.
Lenny, I'm sorry. We have less than a minute to go, but Mary Schiavo, can you briefly respond to that part?
Excellent points on both. The PATCO strike 20 years ago is actually coming back to bite us again, because this is the year in which the rehires are eligible to retire, and the next 2 years they're going to be retiring in massive numbers, and we have a serious air traffic controller shortage because we hired all 14,000 basically at the same time.
Oh.
And on the mergers and buyouts, absolutely yes, many tragedies can be attributed directly to the problems of mergers and buyouts, not the least of which I think was Alaska 261. Because the more layers and buyouts and levels you put on a on an operating system, the less quality control and oversight you have. And sadly, on many of the mergers and buyouts, money was drained from the system that was needed to keep us safe. I think the caller's got his finger on the pulse.
Thank you so much, Mary Schiavo, for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Mary Schiavo, former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing the hour. This is the Ideas Network.